Hey, Lulu here. Whether we are romping through science, music, politics, technology, or feelings, we seek to leave you seeing the world anew. Radiolab adventures right on the edge of what we think we know, wherever you get podcasts.
Listen now to the radical words of this author, academic, professor, talking about how the U.S. didn't intervene in the genocide in Rwanda.
It's almost as though the worse the crime, the more likely we are to say, oh, like, who can even begin to go there and begin to think about making a difference when you have, you know, 8,000 people being murdered a day and bodies, like, piling up?
That is the voice of Samantha Power, one-time humanitarian gadfly, academic outsider, and savage critic of U.S. foreign policy, who today is President Obama's ambassador to the United Nations. Listen now to the radical words of a one-time patient talking about what goes on inside her abnormal head.
The way I think is completely different. I used to think everybody thought in photorealistic pictures. Like if you say to me, think about a church steeple, I only see specific ones. I thought everybody thought that way.
Temple Grandin, once dismissed as mentally retarded, then diagnosed as autistic, she is now one of the radical advocates and authorities on autism as a window on how the brain works. Her writings and ideas have challenged our whole idea of normal. From the fringe to the mainstream, such stories revolve around fascinating characters, but they also tell us a lot about our society and how it defines the outsider. Alyssa Quart's new book, Republic of Outsiders, The Power of Amateurs, Rebels, and Dreamers, is a romp through the renegade nation, once fringy people who have changed the world.
Well, what often happens is that a bit of somebody's idea gets kind of scraped off, and the most assimilatable elements of a given movement or a given style gets taken by the mainstream, and then the people who actually created it to begin with are still left behind. So it's often a complicated process. I interviewed animal rights activists, for instance, and the most extreme or the most challenging of the animal rights activists were not the ones whose ideas were necessarily being absorbed by the mainstream. It was the ones that Whole Foods could sell on its meat aisles that were, you know, readily assimilated.
Being an outsider in America today is a completely mainstream position. Nobody admits to being an insider, right?
Well, that's interesting. I mean, I remember it's probably not just now. There's an interview with Joan Didion, the author who is the ultimate insider, saying something like, I always felt like an outsider.
I know. Everyone says that. In a sense, everybody wants to be a renegade who have, you know, whose opinions were disputed in the beginning and then were vindicated by events, and they sort of take over and triumph. What is it about these outsiders that makes them really outsiders?
Well, it's interesting because I actually put all my sources to an outsider test, whether they could remain outside for more than a year or two. And it wasn't always that easy because how quickly culture works now. The ones that did last as outsiders had some elements that were harder to assimilate into mainstream culture than others, had challenging ideas or practices that just would always be on the outer limits of aesthetics, politics, what have you.
But the characters in your book seem to distinguish themselves by having, and David Lee is an example of this, their sort of alternative view is informed by a passionate moment, a revelatory moment.
Yeah, I kept trying to look for these moments because I felt even in my own life I had had them. And I knew that, for instance, in David Lee's case, he sells meat made from grain, and he really wanted to sell vegan meat that people wouldn't ever, you know, say, gosh, I don't want to eat this. It tastes like the film Solly and Green, you know. No, I want to eat this. It actually tastes like meat. And so he set out to do that after he saw some chickens dying at a chicken slaughterhouse in Seattle. And once he saw those chickens, he just had been a chef before and said, you know, I'm going to be a vegetarian, or, you know, I'm going to eat fish, but I'm not going to eat meat. And I'm going to really spend the rest of my life thinking how I'm going to make other people also want to eat vegetables, not meat.
I mean, his sense of the conditions that thousands and thousands of people work in for chickens motivated him to this cause that has transformed food.
Yeah, and it's a cause that, you know, David Lee, again, you know, when I started interviewing him in 2008 or I think even 2007, that this was far out to start making meat that artificial meat through gluten that tasted like actual meat. And now it's like a huge thing. There's this company called Beyond Meat. Venture capitalists are investing in it. So even in the course of my reporting, which was 5 years, his particular strand of outsiderism has been absorbed.
Do you find that naivete about conventional wisdom or total ignorance of conventional wisdom produces more creativity than anger and distrust and suspicion of conventional wisdom?
I'm not sure. I think that distrust is a motivator, and especially now you see a lot of social services and everything from, you know, mental health services to conventional kind of corporate culture, like music labels faltering and fragmenting. So you see just a lot of spaces for people to feel like they're not being taken care of and there aren't the traditional goals to obtain. So I don't know if that's distrust or if it's just, wow, I'm alone here. I'm going to have to make a different way into the world.
Who is it that you like more, the personalities of the fighters who just never, never give up, or the ones who kind of confusedly stumble into a brave new world and just are too ignorant enough to not stop?
Well, that's such a loaded question because obviously I like the fighters better. I mean, you know, I'm a writer. You know, I like people who are highly subjective and are going at things through, you know, the beat of their own drummer in a very pointed way. I mean, the naive outsider artist is interesting, but their lack of awareness, the fact that they're not really running on a philosophy is not as interesting to me. I mean, I think one of the things that unites all the people in my book is they live philosophy. They live an idea.
So are you a fighter? Are you an outsider?
Well, you know, I think I'm both. And like, I think most people who sort of function as well as, I don't know if I function so well, but as well as many people in media have to, are both outsiders and insiders, right? I mean, I'm an outsider in the sense that I grew up on the edges of a counterculture in the East Village in Manhattan, and my parents weren't outsiders, but I'd say they were connoisseurs of outsiders. And
how did that work? That sounds like some interesting Friday night party.
Well, it meant we watched a lot of avant-garde cinema in sort of people's lofts in Soho and so forth. And then, you know, I'm an insider in the sense, you know, I went to journalism school. I wrote for mainstream publications. I wrote for mainstream presses, publishers. And at one point, I realized probably around 2007, gosh, you know, there's all these bloggers out there. You know, the word rate is going down. And I'm an insider now of a certain kind who's being besieged by outsiders.
Final question. Why are there so few real outsiders of the kind in this book in American politics?
Well, I mean, I think you can see the process that these people have to go through, A, to find themselves, to become themselves, to stay the course, the level of, you know, poverty they're sometimes experiencing and humiliation. There's a animal rights lawyer, people barked at him when he started entering courtrooms. I mean, you imagine any politician who had this level of commitment, what would happen to them, and strangeness, you know, it would not be a pleasant journey.
Elissa Court, thanks so much.
Yeah, you're welcome.